and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
I'm Candy Shannon, host of Morning Brew, the Friday edition, from 5 to 8 a.m. on member-supported WPFW Washington, 89.3 FM.
Welcome to WPFW Washington at 89.3 FM and WPFWFM.org. This is the hour of We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, and I am glad to be at this Jazz and Justice radio station, part of the Pacifica Radio Foundation, in existence out of Washington, D.C. for more than 48 years because we are listener-supported. And listeners, new and seasoned, choose to give us financial wherewithal, social connectivity, in order to build a better world, one broadcast at a time. We do that quite deliberately, and especially each quarter, we have a pledge drive. We seek your funds and membership to our station. Each programmer with her or his or their hour is required to some degree to raise a sufficient amount of funds. My charge is to raise $600 to exceed that, quite frankly, in this hour. And we will do that by presenting to you something that empowers you. We believe in offering something in terms of your support, and I thank you. If you are able, and I will talk about why I'm using the word if later, please do support us at 1-800-222-9739. That's 1-800-222-9739. For those of you who are new to We the People, it's a news magazine weekly on Wednesdays as far as terrestrial broadcasting, and it covers the issues of history, politics, race, and culture, particularly where they intersect, particularly where people have worked with those concerns in the past, but also in the present, to provide us with a secure and healthy future. Our topic today is radical listening for racial exhaustion. Radical listening is a way to hear minoritized speakers reframed, reclaimed, and counter histories which amplify the stories that the dominant narratives miss, ignore, or silence. It's an important practice for our ever-increasing multicultural world. To help us understand this concept, Dr. Relina L. Joseph is with us. She is the Vice Provost of Inclusive Excellence and Professor of African American Studies at UCLA. Her career spans over two decades of advancing inclusive excellence in higher education. At the University of Washington, she served as Professor of Communication and Associate Dean of Equity and Justice, leading initiatives for over 17,000 graduate students. She founded the Center for Communication, Difference, and Equity, which was known for programs like Interrupting Privilege, which we'll talk about. That program fostered transformative conversations on race and power. Dr. Joseph is the author of four books, including the soon forthcoming Racial Exhaustion, How We Move Through Racism in the Wake of DEI from NYU Press. Again, it's forthcoming. Her research focuses on the intersectional nuances of racialized communication, black representation, multiracial identity, and women of color feminism. She is widely recognized for her concept of strategic ambiguity in post-racial discourse. Doctor, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, how are you? How are you doing?
You know that I am tired. I am very tired. How are you?
I'm tired along with you. And there's a particular reason why. I'll just use this week for an example. We started the week commemorating the presence and us cohabiting with Indigenous peoples. There's been a long battle to secure that acknowledgement in significant ways. And the Supreme Court is looking at the Voting Rights Act in this session. And so we have many reasons to be having causes for concern over the matters of race and, unfortunately, in the good old USA, racism. So that's why we're tired.
And, yes, it is.
And we're tired, but as the old song goes, we won't give up. In no ways are we tired. Mm-hmm. It's often the answer that, as I've said just now, that people are tired from confronting and combating racism. It's a reflection of our starting point, and it's something that you present to us as racial exhaustion. What is racial exhaustion? How should we understand it? As obvious as the term is, I'm sure there's something.
Yes. As a race and communication scholar, I talk about racial exhaustion as being really tired of having to confront racism, having to defend ourselves in public spaces, having to justify our existence. And at this moment, seeing the ways in which so many decades, centuries of gains feel like they're being eroded.
And we acknowledge that it's been eroded over decades, but this seems to be an American habit, an American impulse. Let's start with some basics. I think everyone is subject to racial exhaustion, am I right? But they don't experience it the same way, of course.
Absolutely. Our white allies are also subject to racial exhaustion in all kinds of ways. I think that many of us saw over a particular period of time, the time that I talk about is the rise of DEI, of diversity, equity, and inclusion, that we had many white folks who really had a moment of their own racial awakenings and became dedicated to racial causes like Black Lives Matter in a way that we hadn't seen in a long time and in many of our lifetimes. And that got to them as well. And so we see many of those folks falling back, deciding that racism is not actually part of their issue anymore. And part of what I talk about is we need to all build the muscle to be able to move through this thing called racial exhaustion to stay in the fight together.
And be that as it may, the period you just described and other historical periods, which we'll talk about, race and racism is the most discussed initially engaged, and I do emphasize initially, topic, and it's more than a topic. I mean, we're talking about relationships, we're talking about systems and how things are set up, but there's a nagging pain of how does the exhaustion, the racial exhaustion that is, go unacknowledged in our society? What is your understanding of that?
I think it goes unacknowledged in all different kinds of ways. It goes unacknowledged in interpersonal veins, right? So, for example, the daily continued existence of interpersonal racism in the form of microaggressions that, again, I think we've returned to a reactionary moment where so many responses are, why are you being so sensitive? I didn't see that, making people kind of justify these experiences of everyday racism. And then we're seeing that structurally as well, as you were saying that the gains that our parents, our grandparents fought so hard for, and seeing them all rolled back, that feels like it's questioning the existence of our very humanity. That our votes are not as important, our attendance at universities is not as important, that our presence in places like the White House are just not as important, as we've seen some recent data there on the firing of high level African Americans. So I think it combats us from so many different places, and that's part of what fosters this exhaustion.
There's no one way, but there are important ways to really engage this. What should come into the situation? What should come into the picture that might change things?
I think spaces like this, spaces where we are really working to engage deeply with each other, to hear each other, to acknowledge our exhaustion and think about ways that we work through it. And the first one of that for me is about radical listening. How do we really tune in differently to each other? I think radio is a fantastic medium for that. And hear the stories that will either confirm the existence of our own experiences, to say we're not alone, we're not making this up, this is not a one-off, this is indeed systemic. And also to open up our minds, our hearts to other experiences that we're not having and that we need to hear, to understand what our trans brothers and sisters are experiencing right now, perhaps, if that's not a part of our identities, and to think about how our communities can continue to come together to coalesce. But we need to hear each other first.
Yeah, so you're introducing a number of things with your last comment. Is what, and this is becoming a more commonplace word to the happiness of many of us, intersectionality. We're more than one piece of identity. We
That's
reflect
right.
In our humanity, we reflect many aspects of ourselves and people like us. If we can recognize that, we also understand that this notion of radical listening requires much of us, much that is very much worthwhile. What is the characteristics of the practice of radical listening?
Yes. So with radical listening comes from some amazing education scholars who taught us that we need to go into places and listen with all of ourselves, that we need to listen with our hearts, we need to listen with our eyes sometimes, we need to listen to history and to structures, we need to hear silences, and fundamentally we need to sit with each other and listen in a way that we are not trying to create our response, our retort, our argument, but really just to sit and hear the other person as deeply as possible.
Well, being someone who's done some anti-racism training, both as a recipient or an instructor or practitioner, we have well-meaning folks that will engage in this, but let's run the gamut for a second. There's the work situation where some workers, not just workers of majority culture, will complain, oh, here we go again. Here's another training. Or you'll get someone who has really invested a lot of time and energy, and they believe that they're just one tweak or one notch away from a more perfected practice. So I heard you say not jump with ready-made answers, not listening, sitting on your retort or your response or your share. But what are some of the characteristics? And I know later in our conversation we'll talk about this project, Interrupting Privilege, that you conducted for many, many years. But can we just expand a little bit more on the actual listening practice and even some of the context where that can be a good thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that radical listening happens when you're being sending a very intentional expectation for what listening is going to be. So to go into any conversation and say, I'm going to be trying to listen in a different way to you right now. So I might need to ask you for clarification. I might pause for a moment. So it might feel like there's a break from when I respond, but it just means that I'm trying to listen and understand. That listening for understanding piece is so huge. And we don't, you know, I think, for example, about when you put on MSNBC or CNN or a news show where they have the six floating heads there, and you don't see that opportunity of someone saying, okay, I heard you saying X. Is that what you really said? And I wonder if you can tell me a little bit more about that. That's the process of radical listening, and not doing that to catch someone in a trap, but rather to just fully understand and to try and understand from their point of view, from their positionality, as opposed to thinking about how is this going to really reaffirm my own point of view? How does this shore up my own argument? So it's something we see very, very rarely modeled out, but I think it is something that's very doable from inside of our own households to our workplaces to larger structures.
You know, and taking that action, again, we need to acknowledge some particulars about racial exhaustion. Can we even say a little bit more? I'm particularly interested in how people of color distinctly experience racial exhaustion, and without picking a fight, this is different for the alleged majority mm-hmm. culture or the white culture. Mm-hmm. There is a difference. As somebody who's in this practice of journalism, I quite frankly, in all honesty, have very little patience for those experiences being put on equivalency or somebody insisting that they're the same. They are not the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They absolutely are not the same. And we have plenty of data to show us that. The amazing sociologist and ethnic studies scholar William Smith, who's at the University of Utah, coined the phrase racial battle fatigue, and my work would not exist without his work. In that, part of what he does is to connect the real physiological experiences of racism. So the disproportionate ways in which people of color, and he talks a lot in particular about African Americans, experience migraines, experience rates of all kinds of preventable disease, all different types of things, mental health, physical health, because of the daily stress of racism that happens. On the flip side, to think about other work, incredible psychologist Jen Richeson, who's at Yale, writes a lot about the ways in which white people experience racial anxieties when talking about race, that type of thing. And she tracks things like increased heart rate, that this certainly increases increases anxieties, but it does not shorten lifespans. It does not actually act in the same process of the weathering of our bodies that racism does every day. And so, yes, this is absolutely, radical listening is a practice for all of us. I think there's a particular importance for white folks to be able to hear differently around race and to hear about whiteness in ways that might feel uncomfortable, as well as thinking about communities of color.
And if we're talking about listening, we're also talking about it, and we can gladly acknowledge some of the implications and consequences as we go on with this conversation. But first, allow me to reintroduce you. Folks, you're listening to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone. More importantly, I always ask listeners to focus in on our topic at hand and the offerings of our guests. The topic is Radical Listening for Racial Exhaustion. Our guest is Dr. Relina L. Joseph. Dr. Joseph is Vice Provost of Inclusive Excellence and Professor of African American Studies at UCLA. She's the author of Racial Exhaustion, How to Move Through Racism in the Wake of DEI. This hour is presented to you by the good folks, the staff and programmers at WPFW. But there's another important sponsor or engine to the presentation. That's you, the listener. We are in a fall pledge fund drive, which means we need to connect with you, the listener. And to join us in doing that in this hour is Sataria Joyner. Ms. Joyner is the membership coordinator here at the station. She knows that I have to exceed $600 to support our 48-year-old station, that the light bills have to be paid, the power to the transmitter has to be conducted. So without further ado, Sataria, welcome, and tell us, how do we do this? How do folks join us?
All right. Well, first, let me give out the phone number. If you want to give us a call and make your donation, it's 1-800-222-9739. That's 1-800-222-9739. You can also click donate now on our website at WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. You can cash app us, $WPFWFM. You can even text to donate. So you can text the letters WPFWFM to the number 801-801. So however you choose to donate, we invite you to do so. You know, David has been on, how long have you been on PFW?
At one form or another since 2009. I'm like the second baseman or the shortstop. I've been switched around along the grid.
Exactly. And he has been a volunteer and dedicated his time and his energies to bring in quality programming to you each and every week. The new iteration of his program, We the People, has been very well received, very well liked. I know you're out there listening. And so we've only got a goal of $600. We know we can make it. Take the time. I know you hate pulling away from the conversation, but sometimes we really need you to pick up the phone to support not only David and his efforts that he volunteers to bring you this program, but to WPFW, who is offering a space for voices on a commercial-free, independent media source. Now, when we say free, we don't need money free. We still got to pay for lights and rent and transmitters. And, you know, I know some of you heard a few months ago when we were talking about a rat was chewing up equipment. These things happen, but it's through your help over the years that we have continued to not only survive, but thrive. So again, give us a call, 202-588-9739, or donate now at WPFWFM.org. Sorry, that's 1-800-222-9739. You can reach us and make your donation. Don't forget, you can also become a sustainer for as little as $10 a month.
Yes, Sataria, thank you. Five people, 10 people can easily knock down the goal for the hour. But importantly, I'll give people who are new to the station a reason why we want a little bit of your time and a little bit of your financial means in these hard times. You know, we're out of Washington, D.C. I know federal workers have been fired or laid off or on furlough, that has a ripple effect throughout all our communities. And that federal workers are not only in Washington, D.C., but they're across the country. And I know somebody out there is listening that is really getting hard pressed. But those of you who have means can understand that we live under a legacy that preserves justice, that really gives voice to your voice. Lou Hill, a journalist, a Quaker conscientious objector, really believed that if we offer information and culture and not propaganda and not operating for profit, that people would feel supported. They would be supported in their settings, in their communities, with their loved ones, with their families and friends. He believed in that vision. We live under that legacy. It has been upheld by such people as Askia Mohammed, who I had the pleasure of meeting, and really the cause of me joining the station, first as a volunteer. So I ask people again, help us help you. Call 1-800-222-9739 and help support WPFW today. As we go along this program, we'll give you many more reasons to support us, but to support one another. And I thank you in advance. Dr. Joseph, again, thank you for being with us. So we were talking about what radical listening kind of requires of us. How can radical listening cause us to observe things better? You know, it's obviously there's a good motivation in engaging. And you like to say move through. I'm a little bit of a junkyard dog and say confront, combat, but we do mean sincere engagement for purpose. What does radical listening cause us to observe?
Radical listening causes us to observe the moments that might slip by if we are not careful enough. We know this, we're so distracted every day. There's oftentimes that we're doing 3, 4, 5 times the amount of things that we should be doing, and we're not slowing down to actually hear what's happening. And radical listening helps us in those moments, particularly moments of discomfort where we need to slow down and listen. And sometimes that is listening to ourselves and listening to our own exhaustion. And what does it feel like? And how do we have to actually attend to that right now? And so it's a practice that happens every day. It's a practice. It's something that doesn't just happen as a one-off. And it's something that all of us can really learn how to do.
Something that was proof positive of that is a project that I'd like you to talk about that you conducted while at the University of Washington, Interrupting Privilege. Tell us about that project, because I think it's a demonstration of what you just said.
Thank you. Yes. Interrupting Privilege is a racial dialoguing program that started in the fall of 2016. So we all remember what happened in the fall of 2016. And in that moment, our community was feeling quite bereft. I was in Seattle, Washington at the time. And we came together at that moment across generation, across race, across class and culture and religion and all of these other modes of difference to really work to hear each other. For some people, it was really to mourn the moment. For other people, it was just to simply be in community with each other. And what we all learned were these wonderful skills that becomes the book about how to actually move through racial exhaustion. I hear you about the confronting and the combating of racism, and I'm with you, right? And Dr. Smith has the metaphor of racial battle fatigue. But what part of what I want for people to do is to be able to exist for the whole long period of time. So that means, for example, not just racial exhaustion, but practicing things that will help you. I talk a little bit about in the book, moving through discomfort. What are the strategies that help you to tune into your own inner voices, to really calm yourself down, to stay with the conversation, to listen to yourself differently? And then from there, how do we speak in a way that's unfettered? So I have a piece there that's on radical speaking. So from going from the listening to the discomfort to the speaking. And then finally, how do we actually engage in dialogue together? How do we sit down and create not just neutral dialogues, but dialogues that repair? And so part of what I think is so important, where there's a big push in our culture to get to dialogue, right? So for example, right now with the government shutdown, why don't they just talk to each other? Well, I think there's a whole lot of other communication processes that need to happen first, that the listening needs to happen, this absolutely the sitting with discomfort without hurling all kinds of nasty things back and forth at each other needs to happen. The speaking in a really forthright manner, and then probably going back to holding that discomfort and then creating those type of reparative dialogues. But we can't start from jump with dialogue if we haven't done all of these other slow, careful processes with each other very intentionally in community.
And community is something that most of us want, but there has to be, I guess, and pardon the presumption, a desire to truly want it.
Absolutely.
So that being said, I just want to also say, if I've made the right observation, the Interrupting Privilege program covered a wide range of backgrounds, of ages, vocations, situations in life. Am I right about that? I just wanted to.
Yes, that's sure. That is absolutely correct.
And that was in Seattle, you know?
And that was in Seattle. And I think that even though many people don't necessarily say that they want to be in a community with folks who are different from them, I think everyone is looking for community. And they're looking to combat, you know, what we know is this epidemic of loneliness, these experiences of being disconnected from each other. And so I think that part of what I'm hoping that people will be able to take away from the book is an understanding of how do we come together? How do we hear each other, even in these moments of exhaustion, and actually work through this together with a renewed commitment to our own betterment, and also the continued work of trying to create a truly equal, a truly just society, which means that we have to have our institutions listening in different ways as well. But we can't do that if we aren't doing the work individually.
You know, this is kind of out of a logical order, but your project went on for some time. You mentioned an era of DEI. I cringe at saying it that way, because I think, given your analysis and what I've seen of others, the reference to DEI nowadays, diversity, equity, and inclusion, if we're going to talk about an era, it's really a short one, like 3 years. It's punctuated by a pandemic and George Floyd's tragic murder. And it's punctuated by other murders, too, and other acts of violence. It's punctuated by a flurry or an explosion of just rhetorical and political attack. And it's an important marker in what we're called to do, but I'm struggling here to really tie this into like a larger picture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the you know, when you ask people to, I'm just going to say it, to be racially fluent, you know, mm-hmm. that's fine to say that in the academy, but it means something altogether different for folks. Help explain my struggles to our audience.
Yes. No, I talk about racial fluency with just that, the work of talking through race and talking through racism. And those of us who are people of color grew up speaking that other language. And so it comes to us naturally. It feels like something that we know how to do. We know how to turn it on and off in mixed company. We know how to speak in code often with each other. We know how to not say a word and exchange a look in the midst of an experience. And all of that is our process of racial fluency. And even though we know, of course, that white people have a race, that they indeed have whiteness, that because whiteness is something that is not talked about, that it has been, you know, historically in this country considered to just be the norm, and norms become erased and the kind of invisible process upon which all of us understand our race. And so they don't necessarily have that same muscle built up. They don't have the same fluency. They need to work on practicing this every day. So starting with the listening and going through that cycle. And I think that we don't really think about race for white folks in this way, but indeed I think it's essential to have them as a part of an anti-racist process. And I think that it's not just an academic thing. I think it's them talking with each other without worrying about identifying someone by race, for example, as being a slight. That is, it is not a slight to identify one of our Asian American brothers and sisters as Asian American. That is a part of our identities that we're often very proud of, right? And so making sure that people actually have some comfort with talking about that. And that I think it's really important that white people are talking to each other about race, about whiteness, about their own position within it, and not always looking to people of color to be the ones who are doing the explaining or the mark against which they're always measured. That they do their work on their own. We come back together. We work together in coalition. But it's something that they pick up on their own, and it's not just something that happens when we're in interracial situations.
You're causing me to think about an important point that you and others raise, which is the experience of race and racism is not a mere construct. In a technical definition, it is, but it's an operative fiction. It operates mm-hmm. quite strongly with us. Mm-hmm. That's the first point. Mm-hmm. Another point is that there's just this impulse in terms of individualism to really smash down differences, that differences somehow are threatening or wrong or negative mm-hmm. or bad. And then the more important and third and final point in my interruption here is it's not just individualistic. It doesn't rest on proving something in a moment, but it's individuals facing systems, facing history, facing structure, facing right. institutions and so forth. Why the dead end sometimes? You know, for most of us, if we engage this topic, we view the other person and just simply and quickly conclude they just don't want to listen, or they're so set mm-hmm. in their mm-hmm. worldview, their life view, and their mindset that it's useless. And I want to be clear here, at least as the person asking the question, there are times where one can discern a sense of motive, if not the actual hearts and minds of a person, that there are people who are malevolent and who don't intend, for all their social interaction, they have no intention for change.
Yeah. I hear that. I hear that absolutely. And I hear the ways in which engaging with folks who might have views that are not wanting the best for you and all of your community as being just an exhausting task.
They have proven themselves. I'm sorry. I had to get that in there.
And part of what I say in the book is that I at no point want for those who are experiencing racial exhaustion, specifically as people of color, to feel like that they need to run in and have conversations with those who are going to just make them feel more bereft, right? But I do think that there are a lot of folks in the middle, and there are a lot of folks in the middle who have kind of been ignored, especially as we, you know, the ways in which we see the world represented is in these extremes, right? The extreme ends of people who hate each other. And I think we can work a lot with that middle group and find the ways to just hear each other, not commit to coming together with some understanding of this is a singular way we need to move forward. Not even trying to reach a singular, you know, so-called common ground, because we might not have it, but just holding each other. So if we lower the expectation and say, what we need to do is just be in the space where we can hold each other's stories, we can hold each other's thoughts, we can hold each other's identities without denigrating them, that feels like part of a step forward. So I think that to try and get to the incredible issues that are plaguing our society right now, that first we need to work on the very basic steps, which is just learning how to listen better.
And allow me to reintroduce you. We're talking to Dr. Alina L. Joseph. Dr. Joseph is the Vice Provost of Inclusive Excellence and the Professor of African American Studies at UCLA. She is the author of Racial Exhaustion, How to Move Through Racism in the Wake of DEI. And you're listening to We the People. Our topic is Radical Listening for Racial Exhaustion. We can only do that, listeners, because of your participation with this 48-year-old Jazz and Justice radio station. That participation, if it's within your means, is to financially support us and socially connect with us, because through your donations, through your pledges, whether it's a one-time pledge or a nice little sense of scale for you, which is committed in a sustaining basis month after month, those things really do make a difference. They do show up. If you can find yourself at WPFWFM.org, there's a bright red donate button in the upper corner, or call right now 1-800-222-9739, 1-800-222-9739. And our membership coordinator, Satoria Joyner, is about to join me, and yes, she will tell us about the people we need to thank who have put us on our way and how much further we have to go. So Tarya, go ahead and take it away.
Well, we want to thank Sharon English from Ashton, Maryland, who is a new member. Ooh, we don't have a bell.
I don't have a bell in my studio. I'm sorry.
I don't either. So thank you to Sharon English for becoming a new member. We've got Carol, who is a longtime listener and a longtime contributor to WPFW. And that's Carol out of Bethesda, who says, thank you for the great info. And I know Carol is always listening and loves WPFW. So thank you. And we invite you to join Sharon and Carol. I invite you to become a new member, as Sharon did, and invite you, if you haven't given in a while, to come back, as Carol has done. We recognize that things change, especially as we know the world is changing so much right before our eyes, and financial situations are changing. It's one of the reasons why we created Sustainer Program, because we wanted people to be able to give in small increments and yet still make a big impact at WPFW. For as little as $10 a month, you can become a sustainer. Now, those sustaining, they go on until you tell us to stop, but that counts as each year a contribution of $120. That can be huge. The more people we have sustaining the station, and our sustaining program does that by allowing us a monthly income that we can budget for, that we know we're going to have, so that allows us to plan. And it also provides that cushion in between our pledge drives and when we're writing grants and, you know, all these things that we're trying to do to bring in other funds, but our sustainers do just that, sustain us. So consider becoming a sustainer. Like I said, as little as $10 a month or $1,000 a month. I like when people give $89.30 for 89.3, and that allows you to give over $1,070 a year at $89.30 a month. That may be a lot for some, but $10 a month, $120, we invite you to do it. We also say, hey, if you have it, give it. You can join our new Jazz and Justice circle. It's the relaunch of our major giving circle. And that you can join that for $1,000 in one lump sum or over time as well. And that's $1,000 for those who can do that. But however you support independent media, however you support, I was reading a radical listening. I had not heard that statement before. So I had to, you know, listening to the program. But what it sounds a lot like to me as a lay person just introduced, and I'm sure many of you as well, is trying to foster communication between individuals, a greater understanding between people, not just, you know, different races, nationalities, you know, creeds, colors. And that's part of the mission of WPFW. Actually, that's in the first part of our mission speaks to that. And if you believe in that type of programming, if you believe in having these voices heard, we invite you to join us. 1-800-222-9739 or donate now at WPFWFM.org.
Victoria, thank you. And I know that people do believe in that mission. They are here with us. Satara gave you the means to make a donation, a contribution. Again, you can do that by texting 801-801 with the word WPFWFM. Or you can use Cash App, $WPFWFM. And whether it's my show or another show, there's in these instructions, you can always acknowledge which show you're donating to. It really does encourage the programmers like Sophie's Parlor, the oldest women's collective in public radio broadcasting, offering you music and culture by women, but for everyone. That's at 3:00 today. At 2, Zen El Amin, and with Shay Wanana, talks about Middle Eastern affairs. This station has been dedicated to raising the voices of Palestinian people and the issues of fairness and justice throughout the Middle East. And at 1, Africa Now with host Mouiza Moutali and producer James Pope. It's a program focused on the African descendant people, not only in the continent, but throughout the world, throughout the diaspora. And I would be remiss that if I didn't mention that we don't forget the blues during the week at the noontime hour. The Wednesday edition is with Clarence the Blues Man Turner. Back to you, Dr. Joseph, and thank you. Thank you for being with us. I wanted to also get in, especially since I'm mindful that there are teachers, professors, social workers, librarians that listen to this show, and then young people who want to take up leadership. We've talked about a good sense of discipline or rigor that radical listening requires. And each of those folks that I mentioned, they are really good listeners, especially as they're doing their job well. For white allies, I want to acknowledge something that I think in your book and in your works acknowledge. There's kind of a squeeze. You know, we keep on encouraging them to talk to fellow peers, but this is the beginning of another point, but let's acknowledge the squeeze that white allies might feel, so they know that we're aware of that and that we can encourage them to take care of themselves and to join with others to take care of themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of the white people who are really working hard to be in the fight, I think now more than ever there is a sense that why are you doing this work? This is not about us right now. There are bigger things to be talking about. There are other things to be talking about, and yet we know that there are. We need everyone in the fight with us. And part of what we need to do is to construct intersectional coalitions ourselves and to have our communities really acknowledging our intersectionality, and we're asking them to do the same things. So absolutely understanding that there, you know, is an incredibly diverse group of white people who are, some of whom might have lots of people of color in their families. There might be some who, although I'll have to say, just because you have people of color in your family doesn't necessarily mean that you're talking about race. But the ways in which we know that people are doing the fight in their own ways, and they need to be able to come back and be cared for, and to know that this is a worthwhile task. This is absolutely a worthwhile task.
The reason I bring this up is white racial exhaustion can take a particular turn, and without being mocking, I wanted to do the acknowledgement first, because in one sense it can be part of the system of racism itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
The DEI efforts were very corporate, very top down.
Yes.
You know, they didn't represent a grassroots or a deeply gut held action.
Absolutely. And this is why in the book I talk a little bit about, this is how they were so easily dismantled, because they really did come from the top. They were informed by movement, but they were not, DEI was not a movement in and of itself. And so for it to be kind of picked apart and taken away, it happened. And we've seen this now in so many different spheres. And so what we need to do instead is to think about how do we infuse our understandings of all of us, of all of our communities, of all folks, into every aspect of everywhere. Right. And this is why leaning back on that communication piece is so important. It's just the fundamental way in which we are human is how we communicate. And so this takes us to thinking about how do we create modes of difference that start with me, that are not looking for a solution that comes from somewhere, from me in Washington would be thousands of miles away. But rather this begins with my own sphere of influence. How do I work to be a radical listener? How do I work to work towards that restorative type of dialogue with people? And how do I work towards change making?
You know, I'm mindful of the clock, our duties in this pledge drive, but I guess a couple of things. I want to thank you, first of all, for the continual thread of it's not just an individualistic thing, that it's the individual meeting and encountering and being part of a structure, a system, of a history, of a community. It's not just individualistic. Let me give an open-ended question to you is, given all the current events that are going on, how does one remain hopeful? And I understand, if I think I've got the understanding from you correctly, radical listening is just one tool, one part, one sense of being in dealing with racial exhaustion.
That's right. I mean, I think fundamentally the ways in which we connect with each other, that's how we are all going to not just soothe ourselves, but create our ways forward. And so what I'm trying to do in the book is to give those strategies for how to come together, to how to come together across difference within communities, and really think about how do we not only make change, but take care of ourselves, take care of each other in these incredibly difficult times.
Well, Dr. Relina Joseph, thank you for that encouragement. Again, Dr. Joseph is the Vice Provost of Inclusive Excellence and the Professor of African American Studies at UCLA. She is the author of Racial Exhaustion, How to Move Through Racism in the Wake of DEI. And right here at We the People, we've been talking about radical listening for racial exhaustion. I suspect, Dr. Joseph, that we're going to have to talk some more about this, and I hope to have you back
soon. Please.
I'm going to just express that quite directly. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I want to thank Mike Niseller, our engineer, and the News and Public Affairs Department of WPFW, and my fellow programmers as well. Sitaria joined this morning, our membership coordinator. Importantly, we've got a few minutes to go, folks. I need to exceed $400 to get my goal in this hour. Please, 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 someone out there is of means. Someone is deeply connected to this issue and the issues that we have talked about. It's no accident that I hear from people and we talk about such things as banned books or how kids experience racism in this political age, or the environment, or plastics in our environment, or heroic leaders like Howard Thurman. And that is no accident. I'm grateful for your support to enable that. That's why I'm here. That's why you're here. So I thank you, the listener, for supporting this station. Even as this program concludes, you can still give to this program and to WPFW by calling 1-800-222-9739. I ask you to take good care of yourself and others, and we hopefully will meet again sometime on the radio in the near future. Take care.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
Hey, DC, we're reigniting the spirit of unity in our community beginning Monday, October 13th through Saturday, October 19th, by commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March and UniFest, two iconic events that shaped our history and continue to inspire our future. Events include prayer calls, a torch run, a lantern peace walk, a recommitment service, and a mini UniFest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families, reviving the values of the Million Man March and UniFest. Details at UnionTempleDC.com.
Hi there, this is Tata from Rhizome DC. I want to tell you about an important exhibit that's on the view at the MLK Library through December. It's about artist-run, non-commercial DIY spaces in the district, covering history from the 70s to today. On the weekend of October 18th and 19th, we will activate the exhibit with the DIY in DC Festival, featuring music, workshops, participatory movement, pozole, healing sounds for your house plants, important conversations with bright local artists and organizers. Details on rhizomedc.org.
This Saturday, October 18th, from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., WPFW combines music and message by integrating coverage of the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March and No Kings DC rally into your favorite Saturday music lineup. We'll offer cutaways from both events, as well as go live to the No Kings rally from noon until 2 p.m. Jazz and justice at its finest on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world.